bringing you a common sense and fresh perspective to creating a just society. This is Common Sense on Social Justice. You'll get equipped with the tools you need to carry out social justice right where you are. Now, here's the host of Common Sense on Social Justice, Michael Davis.
Thank you again so much for joining us today. It is good to have you here. We're continuing our study of Dilexita, the apostolic exhortation of Pope Leo XIII on love for the poor. Today we're in part two, and we begin chapter one. This exhortation is rather lengthy. It is divided into, I believe, five chapters, and each chapter has then subsections in it. Today we're going to look at chapter one, entitled A Few Essential Words. So these are the real foundation of what Pope Leo is building up to. Now, I need to call out somebody for their goodness before we dive into this study today, and I have been given permission to mention her name, but this goes out to Molly. Molly is such a good soul and serves the poor in Colorado. And one day, a friend of mine, Kevin Williams, who's been on this podcast, Kevin's driving Molly to an appointment, and they did not know that each other knew me. So there, Kevin's going there. Molly sees a tent, a homeless tent on the side of the road, and she says, "Kevin, stop here." So they pull over. She's talks to the homeless there in that little encampment on the side of the road. She gives them some supplies, some resources. And when they got back in the car, Kevin related that Molly, or Kevin asked her, "Why did you do that?" And she said, "Michael Davis taught me to do that." So Molly is one of those listeners, an avid listener of this podcast, who is practicing what I'm preaching. So Molly, this goes out to you. You are a shining example of what we're talking about in this podcast. You are creating that just society right where you are. And God bless you for being such a saintly soul. Have you tried to explain something to someone as simply and clearly as you possibly can, and they still don't understand? You scratch your head wondering how you could possibly make it any easier to understand. Well, after today's episode, if you still don't get it, then I don't know what to say, because Pope Leo is going to spell out the reality of our present world so clearly that I truly hope that you get it. In paragraph four, the Pope says that the smallest gesture of affection can bring relief to the suffering. The smallest gesture of relief can bring relief to the suffering. I remember a man one time here in Portland. It had been probably 5 years since I had seen him. He was homeless and addicted to alcohol. When I had met with him, I would see him every day. I would just say, "Hey, how's it going?" I never really got beyond, "Hey, how's it going?" with him. It didn't develop. And then 5 years later, I run into him, and he looks good, clean. And he said, "Hey, I've got a job. I've got a house. I've got my wife back. All this stuff." And I said, and he said, "Michael, you had everything to do with it." I was like, I had everything to do with it. I said, "I didn't do anything. All I would do is say, 'Hey, how you doing?'" And he said, "It was the fact that you would stop and say hi to me and ask me how I do, and that inspired me so much that I knew what I had to do to get my life back together." And that's what Pope says. The smallest gesture can bring relief to the suffering. Just going down and looking and smiling. I've shared this before, but I gotta share it again, the story. Mother Teresa had come to the United States. She was in San Francisco. She flew into San Francisco International Airport, and there was a priest who was charged with picking up Mother Teresa. Can you imagine that? My job is to drive Mother Teresa safely to where she was to stay. As they were walking to the car, the priest looked behind him and he didn't see Mother Teresa anywhere. And he's like, oh no, I've lost Mother Teresa. He finally found her, and what had happened, she saw a homeless person and she bent down, looked them in the eye to talk to them, see how they're doing. And the priest said he repented at the sight of that for his own callousness. The smallest gesture of affection can bring relief to the suffering. It doesn't have to be magic. You don't have to know everything. Just be human to another human in that moment. Now, in paragraph 5 of the exhortation here, in the first sentence, it says, love for the Lord then is one with love for the poor. Love for the Lord then is one with love for the poor. You cannot separate the two. And we do live in such separation that somehow we can go to Mass, pray and read and recite certain prayers, and somehow that's good enough. No, it is not good enough. We must go forth and love the poor, love the immigrant, love the abandoned, love the sick, the elderly, widows and orphans, and so on. The rituals that we go through and worship are not the destination. Rather, Mass is the preparation for the real work. Notice that the priest says, go forth, the Mass is ended. The Mass is the sending forth of the disciples of Jesus to go do the work. In fact, St. Paul says that pastors exist in the church for the, not just pastors, but teachers and the various offices in the church. They exist for the purpose of equipping you and I to go do the work of the kingdom. So the Mass is the sending out to do the work of the kingdom. The Mass is not the destination. It's the starting point. And that's why the priest says, go forth, the Mass is ended. Now, further into this paragraph, we learn that to know Christ, you must know him in those who suffer. Know Christ in those who are trapped by addiction. Know Christ by those who are in prison. Because Jesus identifies with the abandoned and the outcast and the broken and the poor. Jesus identifies with them. And if you want to know Jesus, you got to know them. Here's another Mother Teresa story. Now, I think I've related this too before. There was a man who was visiting Mother Teresa and observing her work. And he and Mother Teresa were standing out on the sidewalk one day there in Calcutta. And the priest asked Mother Teresa, he said, teach me to pray or to talk to God the way you talk to God. And I'm sure he was expecting some high, pious, saintly answer, right? So he says, Mother Teresa, teach me to talk to God the way you talk to God. And she pointed to a leper that was sitting on the sidewalk behind them. And she said, he's sitting right there. Go talk to him. Mother Teresa understood that you cannot separate Christ from the poor. That is where he identifies, is with the poor, the addicted, the imprisoned, the trapped, those who are in captivity. Now, again, these chapters are broken down into sections. The first section is in chapter or paragraph 6 and 7 are entitled Saint Francis. So Pope Leo begins our journey, our deep dive here with the example of Saint Francis. One of the things that Pope Leo brings out is how the Apostle Paul was going out on mission to start churches and to spread the gospel to the Gentiles. So, as a good Catholic, and I know this may offend you if you're Protestant, but as a good Catholic, Paul went to Peter, James, and John, because Paul recognized the authority of Peter, James, and John, and Paul was not going to do anything without their permission and the laying on of their hands. So, even back then, Paul recognized the apostolic authority of the church. So Paul goes to Peter, James, John, gets their permission, their approval to go spread the gospel to the Gentiles. And the one thing, and Pope Leo brings this out, is that they told Paul, do not forget the poor. Do not forget the poor. And what was Paul's response? It is the very thing I was eager to do, was to serve the poor. So Peter, James, John, Paul, they did not separate serving the poor from the love of Christ or from identity with Christ. In fact, as Peter, James, and John tells Paul, we're giving you permission to spread the gospel to the Gentiles, but don't forget the poor, because you can't separate serving the poor with spreading the gospel. And Paul's response says, well, serving the poor is the very thing I'm eager to do. And not just preaching the gospel in some abstract way, but living out the gospel among the Gentiles by serving the poor. That's the thing I want to do. So he does that, and then Pope Leo states that he is convinced that the Vatican II call for preferential treatment of the poor is the great renewal of the church. The great renewal of the church is not what language we do Mass in or what the various nuances of the Mass are compared to what they were pre-Vatican II. Rather, Pope Leo says he's convinced that preferential treatment of the poor, which was in the Vatican II documents, that's the renewal of the church, because the church had kind of stopped giving preferential treatment to the poor and giving it to the rich instead. And what we learn in this section is that St. Francis really is the example of what evangelical renewal looks like. In fact, he says that St. Francis in the 1200s prompted the evangelical renewal in the church and society of his time, because the church, again, had got chummy with the wealthy and the powerful, and St. Francis basically told the church, knock it off. Christ identifies with the poor. Again, I want to call you to the book that I'm towards the end of. It's been a shot of encouragement for me, and it's very, very well written, by Ched Myers, called Healing Affluenza and Resisting Plutocracy. In fact, I'm going to hear Ched Myers speak this coming week at a webinar. But Healing Affluenza and Resisting Plutocracy, it's really a good exposition of Luke's gospel and how Luke, through his lens of Jesus, calls us back to the ancient Sabbath economics of Jewish life. Now, in part two, which covers paragraphs 8 through 12, is entitled The Cry of the Poor. Now, this is going to be challenging to you, okay, and to me. The Cry of the Poor. In paragraph 5, the Pope says, contact with those who are lowly and powerless is a fundamental way of encountering the Lord of history. In the poor, he continues to speak to us. And in paragraph 8, he says, God hears the cry of his children. God cares. God is listening. The poor are crying out. The orphans are weeping. Those who are victims of domestic violence are broken in tears. Abandoned children in the streets of third world countries are crying out. The hungry are crying out. The immigrants are crying out. They're crying out. And God is listening, but he is listening through us. And when we turn a deaf ear to the poor, and for my dear friend Kevin in Colorado, the children in the womb are crying out for justice. And God is listening, but he's listening through us. And when we turn a deaf ear to the poor, be they in the womb or in the slums or wherever we find the poor, we are blocking what God wishes to do in history. Hear that again. When we fail to hear their cry. We are blocking what God wishes to do in history. God wishes that every child in the womb be born. Further, he wishes that they be born to healthy parents. Further, he wishes that those children be born to healthy parents in healthy neighborhoods. God wishes for the hungry to be fed and experience enough. God wishes for those in prison to have friends, healthy friends, to show them a way of a healthy life. God wishes for the homeless to be treated with equal dignity as the wealthy. God wishes for the poor to be treated with human dignity, and he's doing it through us. And if we turn a deaf ear to their cry, then God, it is a grave sin to turn a deaf ear to the cry of the poor, because we're really turning a deaf ear to God. And I like here in this paragraph, this stark reminder that either we listen to the cry of the poor or they cry out against us. Notice what Pope Leo says in this paragraph 8. Either we hear the cry of the poor or they cry out against us. Either we humble ourselves and listen or we face certain judgment. Do not think that attending Mass every week, saying the right prayers, doing the right things at Mass is going to be enough. That is only the building blocks for what we're really going to be judged on, according to Matthew 25. Now, in paragraph 9, the Pope talks about the different kinds of poverty in history. So, you know, poverty is not like a one-size-fits-all. There are various kinds of poverty in our world, whether it's the poverty of those who lack material means, the poverty of those who are socially marginalized, such as people of color have been in America, and they lack the means to give voice to their dignity. You know, I think of people like Martin Luther King, like, you know, Jesse Jackson, others who remind us constantly to remember our Black brothers and sisters, but oftentimes we just ignore them. We have to have the moral fortitude to hear the cries of the poor. There are those who are in moral and spiritual poverty. Maybe they haven't heard the gospel. Maybe whatever reason, they're living in a moral deprivation, and we need to hear their cries for healing. There's cultural poverties. There's poverty of those who find themselves in a position of social or personal weakness, the vulnerable, we would call them. They're the poverty of those who have no rights, no space, no freedom, the Pope says. The poverty of those who are abused, abandoned, whatever. There's various kinds of poverty, and we are called to love those people, those brothers and sisters. Now, in paragraphs 10 through 12, there's a warning given by the Pope here that we must change our thinking. Our society is oriented towards the rich and the elite. They just are. It's the rich and the elite who get all their posts recognized on X, right, or whatever, or recognized on TV. And our society is oriented towards the rich and elite. Our society is oriented in such a way that we actually create more poverty. Land becomes a money-making adventure, so people can't even afford a place to live. Thus, housing costs driven up. Property taxes are raised to unsustainable levels. Thus, we price people out onto the streets, and I'm calling out the county that I live in, Multnomah County. Your property taxes are too high. Of course, I'm for no property taxes, because all property taxes are is us paying rent to the government. I don't think the government should be owed anything for our land. But in my own county, Multnomah County, the property taxes have been raised to unsustainable levels. And so people are driven out onto the streets. And yeah, you know, if I could, I know I can't get a meeting with my representatives in the at Portland City Hall. Portland's divided into districts, and you know, we vote, I think, for two representatives out of the district I live in. If I could get their ear for just a moment, I would say, if you're so concerned about the high cost of rent, at least cut the property taxes in half, please. You know, that would help a lot. We defund public transportation, and so the poor can't get to meaningful employment because we defund public transportation. We make cars too expensive to buy or maintain. If people could buy a car, they can't maintain it. Thus, we're pushing the poor out of areas where they could have jobs that actually provide. In healthcare, we put profits over people, thus making it difficult for people to maintain good health. In food, we put profits over people, thus altering food sources to attack the body rather than to sustain it. And on we go. It is always profits over people. And we've got to knock that nonsense off if we expect the blessing of God. Now, finally, the third section in chapter one is entitled Ideological Prejudices. And this is in paragraphs 13 through 15, Ideological Prejudices. In paragraph 13, he talks about looking beyond the data. The Pope says, data sometimes is interpreted, and he puts that in quotes, to convince us that the situation of the poor is not that serious. The overall reality, though, is quite evident. Some economic rules have proved effective for growth, but not for integral human development. Wealth has increased, but together with inequality, with the result that new forms of poverty are emerging. The claim that the modern world has reduced poverty is made by measuring poverty with criteria from the past that do not correspond to present-day realities. And he says, in other times, for example, lack of access to electric energy was not considered a sign of poverty, nor was it a source of hardship. Poverty must always be understood and gauged in the context of the actual opportunities available in each concrete historical period. Amen to that. Yeah, people used to be able to live by candlelight and all of that, but nowadays you have to have electricity. Why? To get a meaningful job, you got to have a computer, which runs on electricity. You got to have Wi-Fi, which runs on electricity. And, you know, you have to have electricity to run the places of employment nowadays. And when the poor do not have access to that, and trust me, at my job that I do during the day, I have lots of people come to me because their electricity is about to be shut off because they had to choose between food and electricity. Yeah, see, that's the poor crying out. Paragraph 14, the poor, he says, are not there by chance or by blind and cruel fate, nor most of them, for them, poverty is not a choice. Yet there are those who still presume to make this claim, not revealing their own blindness and cruelty. It's not the choice of people to be poor. It is our systems that we have put in place to force people into poverty so that a handful could be rich. And then paragraph 15, he says, Christians too, on a number of occasions, have succumbed to attitudes shaped by secular ideologies or political and economic approaches that lead to gross generalizations and mistaken conclusions. In other words, the Pope is saying, if we're going to get this thing right and really serve the poor and hear their cry, we must change our attitudes and change our thinking and develop gospel-centered philosophies rather than world-centered philosophies that it's all their fault that they're poor. If you want to see whose fault it is, why there's so much poverty in the world, look in the mirror sometime. It comes down to the need for us to keep going back and rereading the Gospels. Now, have you heard this lately, this phrase? A new study shows. da, da, da. How many times have you heard about what a new study shows? You hear it in the news, you see it on social media. A new study shows that 50% of people believe that 50% of people are part of studies. You know, it's just these constant studies that show something or other. Well, forget the studies. Look out your window. Drive or walk down the street and just look and see the reality of what is. Drive to different parts of town and see the reality of what is. You know, in the movie Blindside, the mother who lives in the suburbs of Memphis has to go to the ghetto to pick up Michael Orr, where he lived. And she is confronted with a different reality than what she is used to. Well, may God give us the grace to see, to truly see the poverty that is flooding our world and to open our hearts to create a just society right where we are.
You've been listening to Common Sense on Social Justice with your host, Michael Davis. A common sense and fresh perspective to creating justice where you are. Share your comments and questions with Michael by emailing sjcommonsense@gmail.com. That's sjcommonsense@gmail.com.